Welcome to 15 Minutes of Problem Solving Discussion with Fred Kuhn and our next guest.
Welcome, everybody. Workplace Strategies again. My guest today is Carlos Perez. Carlos has quite a background. For those of you who wear the uniform, he's a retired 06. And for those of you who don't know and not in the military, he's a full bird colonel. He has 26 years of active duty experience and now works as a civilian for the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association, which he'll talk about in just a minute. Carlos is the chief operating officer for that organization and assistant secretary. He has had battalion command responsibilities, combat deployments in Bosnia, Iraq, Afghanistan. His experience includes programming, budgeting, national security policy, and economic policy. He served on the economics faculty at the National Defense University's Eisenhower School and at West Point and was a professor of military science at the University of Hawaii. He holds a bachelor's in mathematics from West Point and an MBA from Stanford and a master's in science in national resource strategy from the Eisenhower School. Wow. So, Carlos, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Fred. Thank you for having me. It's a privilege to be here and have an opportunity to speak with our community that we at AFMA serve. At 139 years and counting, AFMA is our nation's longest-standing not-for-profit provider of financial solutions for active military veterans and their families. So it's a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. That might even be a podcast by itself. But our podcast today is titled Post-Military Job Interview Tips. Okay, you're getting out, you're going to apply for jobs in either the defense or the non-defense or the nonprofit sectors, defense, non-defense sectors of the economy. So what are opportunities, as you see it, Carlos, for veterans in preparing for an interview? What do they need to do to prepare for an interview when they hit the streets?
Fred, that's a great question. You know, while we're in the service, very few of us think about the fact that one day we will all hang up our uniform. And what we have found is that, like anything else we've done, you must prepare. You have to prepare for that transition and that interview. And so one of the things that we have that we are fortunate in the military is that there are a bunch of resources out there available for us specifically designed to do that. First of all, there are transition courses that each service offers. Some of them are congressionally mandated. So there's a core set of classes that every service member now leaving the service has to go through. But what a lot of people don't realize is that there are also optional seminars, and these are pretty fantastic. I looked recently here locally in Northern Virginia, just at Fort Belvoir and Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall, which are pretty close, and they offer workshops and things like marketing yourself for a second career, employee benefits and salary negotiations, business franchise opportunities, and many, many more. And so one of the first opportunities is just that, is find these courses. They're free and they're available to transitioning soldiers, service members, and take them. Another one is that many veteran service organizations also offer workshops to prepare for an interview and for business research. And then the third, which I like, is your network and your peers. All of us that are leaving the service know people that have gone through it. One of the things that I started to do as I was approaching my retirement from the military is what I called lunch with a friend. So about once or twice a month, I'd reach out to somebody that I knew that I trusted that had recently transitioned. And I would just take them out to lunch and pick their brain about what worked well for them and what didn't in the job search and the interview. And the whole reason for doing this is to align four things. First, your employment objectives. Second, your skill set. Third, the job. And fourth, the company. So the purpose of all that preparation for the interview is to make sure that you are aligned in those four areas.
Let me ask you this, Carlos. This brings to mind one of the biggest 800-pound gorillas in the room, and that's LinkedIn. And you mentioned networking and to get out and meet people. How do you advise your military colleagues to manage LinkedIn? Because I know many of them don't have a LinkedIn profile.
Right. What we find is that LinkedIn and other professional networks like LinkedIn are becoming increasingly important in a couple of ways. We normally think of them as ways to look maybe for jobs, right? But the reality is that LinkedIn is a powerful research tool. So if you find a particular company that you're interested in, LinkedIn allows you to find out a little bit more about the company and, more importantly, see if anybody in your network is affiliated with that company. And if so, that is a great thing to do, to reach out to that person to learn a little bit more and gain an insider's view of the company and what it does. So I think LinkedIn is here to stay. We see that increasingly important. And in some cases, I remember when I went through my transition, we had a couple of cases where the company just went straight out by the LinkedIn profile and didn't even use the traditional paper resume. So my advice to veterans is, if you've been putting off LinkedIn, don't do so anymore. Make that thing current. Make sure it reflects your skills and all of the things that make you unique and attractive to an employer.
I would also suggest that they read as much as they can about a proper LinkedIn profile structure. It's organized into six parts. You need to understand those six parts. You need a professional picture. You may or may not want a uniformed picture. You may want to go and get a professional photographer to take a headshot of you, because that's what the civilian world is looking at. The fact that if you go to the defense sector, maybe a picture in your uniform would be nice, but most of the time it's a headshot done by a professional photographer so that you can present yourself, wear a suit, wear a tie.
Fred, I agree 100% with that advice. Get a good headshot and make sure that that profile looks professional. And in fact, spoke with a friend by email this week who had a great-looking profile, and what he told me is that he actually found a workshop on building your LinkedIn profile, and it looks great.
We conduct a series of seminars, workshops online for the whole LinkedIn thing. So there are a number of them out there, and I don't intend to be self-serving, but there are you are correct. There's plenty of information on how to prepare a LinkedIn profile. It's all over the web. And the thing is, just do it. Don't think about it. Just do it. And your SF-14, what, 214, is that what it's called? 114, 214? 214. You've got to be able to translate all that, which kind of segues into our second part of the first question here, which is, you have a lot of acronyms in the military, and nobody seems to understand them. And so how do you advise people to deal with that, to translate all those great skills they have so that the civilian population who's hiring them understand what they're buying?
Yeah, this is something that we have to work on quite a bit when we transition. I call it the jargon trap, and that is that we are so used to speaking our own unique language in the military that to outsiders, it really is a foreign language. And so as a veteran going into interviews, you have to look at your skill sets and inventory them, understand them. But more importantly, you must translate those skill sets to something that prospective employers would be interested in and, more specifically, want to hire. And so we in the military have experience in leadership, in logistics, in maintenance, in systems, in analysis. And we have to make sure that we bring that out. And the other trap that we fall into is a lot of times we want to talk about the position that we had and what we did. And it's not what we did or what position we were occupying. It's what you accomplished.
Correct.
That then demonstrates your skills.
Right. This is one of the most difficult things. I work with my team on a military bases, and we do the ETAP and CTAP seminars. And one of the hardest things, you're right, Carlos, one of the hardest things is getting this jargon translated into understandable terms, leadership, management skills, critical thinking. But there's another aspect of this which is newer within the human resources community, been around in the HR community quite a while, but in terms of the actual bosses who hire and do the hiring and the firing, the decision makers at the corporations in the ops positions and the technical positions, they are now learning about behavioral competencies. So it's not only the technology and functional competencies that you have or skills, it is also your behavioral skills. And if you summed it all up, the question becomes, do you play well with others? And in the military, it's all about we. So one of the hardest things to get them to understand is, what skills did you use as a leader? And those are your behavioral skills that you need to also be able to discuss during an interview and incorporate those in with your functional and technical skills.
Absolutely, Fred. And I would add, not only to communicate them, but to then give some concrete examples. Because one of the other things that I observed, and I'm sure you do too, is a lot of initial draft resumes and skill sets by military preparing for an interview list things like, I'm a leader, and I'm a team builder, and I'm a people person. And my response to that is, great, show me how. So if you told me you're a leader, would you find it as an interviewer more powerful if somebody says, I'm a great leader, or if they said, I'm a MacArthur Leadership Award recipient, and I attended Ranger School and competed in Ranger School, or if somebody said, I'm a logistics expert, or if they said, I am Lean Six Sigma certified.
Right.
So not only do you want to identify those skills, but more importantly, show how you possess them.
And even further than that, not only be able to use the right words, but be able to tell the story. And this kind of segues into what you and I were talking about before the podcast, which is this star story or the SAR story.
Sure.
And our share stories. So why don't you start that part of the conversation and I'll annotate it with the share.
Sure. As we look at our skill sets and prepare for interviews and try to think through how we're going to communicate that to our potential employer, one of the things we have to do is to demonstrate how those skills translate into comparable civilian tasks and then show that. Well, one of the techniques taught at some of our transition courses in the military, I attended a Marine Corps executive transition program when I was separating or retiring, and there they taught the STAR technique. And STAR is an acronym that stands for Situation, Task, Action, and Result. And so rather than just telling somebody, hey, I'm a great budgeting person, or I do programming, and programming is a great example of jargon, right? Programming to you might mean computer programming. Programming to somebody on the Army staff might be somebody who works with money and resources. So rather than just saying I'm a programmer, how about a STAR statement and an example, and these numbers are going to be made up, but I'll use them nonetheless. Here's a STAR statement that demonstrates budgeting and programming. Several years ago, the Secretary of Defense directed portfolio reviews for all military programs. And the task was to review these programs and make recommendations for programming and allocating dollars against systems that were in procurement. So the action is, and you wouldn't say the letters, but here the action is, in this case, I and a team of 8 people met with stakeholders and proponents of the different programs, and we developed an investment portfolio of $1 billion that was optimized to meet the priorities of those stakeholders for over 20 procurement programs. So what I've just done there is taken a fairly generic thing, budgeting and programming, and demonstrated how I use that skill to produce a result for a senior leader. And that is, I optimized a portfolio of a significant amount of resources and a significant amount of systems.
I'm going to add to that, Carlos, for the listeners. Years ago, I looked at the STAR and the SAR and the VAR and all of that sort of thing, and I added a couple of letters to it to call it a SHARE, S-H-A-R-E, story. And the two differential letters are H and E. H is, an explanation would be, I can hire anybody to dig a ditch. You tell me that you dug the Grand Canyon in the same amount of time, I'm going to sit up and listen to what you have to say. So the H is, how big is the mountain? Because the greater that mountain appears to the interviewer listening to you, the more value you are perceived to have to that company, the greater your value. And the E is critical, mentioned that earlier, and that's the emotional quotient or the behavioral competencies. Are you a team player? Do you play well with others? That's generally used. The E is generally used in the interview situation. Now, you gave an example. I'm going to read you an accomplishment, and I'm going to read you the story behind it, as you mentioned. 20% IRR projected in the opening of 12 restaurants in 6 states by developing an expansion plan that leveraged consumer research and competitive intelligence to design a new restaurant prototype with revised menu, updating advertising, promotional tactics, and refined customer service practices. Now, that by itself is not bad because he's got a lot of keywords in there. He's given you how well he did it, which is what I'm buying. Can he move mountains? How big, how far, how fast? But then the story goes on, how he did it, because they also want to know what your style of running things and your style of leadership, style of management. So it goes on to tell a story. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there's a whole story behind that. And so you must be able to be prepared during the interview to tell that story and use the right words and be able to demonstrate that you can, in fact, bring value to the company. Well, that's enough lecturing on my part, Carlos.
No, but that's a great point, Fred. That's a great point. In fact, what you've touched on is that, you know, we have many skills, and the question is, what skills matter the most to that company that you're interviewing with? And that could be different for different companies. So I think that's a great example. Is, you know, what matters most to that potential employer? Tell him or her.
Right. So let's move to our next question, Carlos, which is, what advantages might a veteran have regarding interviews?
Well, again, so in the military and through our service, we have this diverse set of experiences and skills, and you really do bring a unique perspective to those jobs. And, you know, when you look at the population today, most people have not served in the military, so you bring a very unique thing. As a young company commander in the Army, less than 30 years old, you may have taken an organization of 120-plus people overseas with all of their equipment and then executed a pretty challenging mission. That's not something everybody does. And so to bring that skill set into the corporate sector is incredibly valuable. And so it's not only what the company will do for you, but rather it's what you are doing for that company in broadening their understanding of other ways to do things, other ways to motivate people, and all the other stuff we've already talked about.
To use your example, Carlos, if we took a company of men and women overseas to Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever they're going, the logistics involved in that are incredible. The planning, the organization, the meetings, the training, the readiness, all of those things apply to the private sector of the economy. My company, any company, wants people who know how to plan, who know how to organize, who know how to execute and do it well. That's what they're buying. So if you have those kind of skills, for God's sakes, folks, learn to tell them.
You have demonstrated the very skills and traits and qualities that those companies need. And to come back to your share, to your E, oh, by the way, every service member has somebody else. They may not be married, but there are other people that are linked to that service member that you have probably also prepared and reached out to. So there is this human emotional component to what you have done that other people may never have had experience with.
For example, a guy, his wife is getting ready to have the baby tomorrow, and you're leaving today. There's some emotional counseling involved in there. There's some listening, active, empathetic listening. There's all sorts of behaviors that you're going to talk to that guy or gal about, whatever that problem or situation is, because they are strained about leaving and loyalty to the unit, but they have a loyalty to their family or whatever situation's going on. So those are the kinds of behaviors, leadership behaviors, that are important to integrate into that story.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, folks, we've spent a lot of good time again today, and our guest is just a great commenter. So, Carlos, let's have another podcast, and let's do it on the common mistakes veterans make during interviews. How's that?
Sounds great, Fred.
Thank you, Carlos. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. If you wish to speak with Fred or you want a transcript of this interview, send an email to podcast@stuartcoopercoon.com. See you soon.